Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, this is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
No, there may not be any brooms for use this week in Tampa Bay, at least when it comes to sweeping series, but business has been taken care of to the point where tomorrow afternoon, Saturday evening, may feature a handshake line inside Amalie Arena, and that's a good thing. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network. My name is Tom Lang, and I am thrilled to be talking to you on the heels of a good week for the Lightning. There were three games, three wins available. If we're going to do it like the regular season, let's morph it into playoff mode. Three wins available to the Tampa Bay Lightning since we last spoke, and we procured two of them. A rousing victory on a Saturday afternoon at Amalie Arena, and then we lose a game three up in New Jersey where they're going to empty the bucket with all the effort they got. That's going to be the one, and New Jersey comes away with a win. A couple empty netters on the way to a 5-2 victory for the Devils, and then we respond with a tightly contested and tightly played 3-1 victory Wednesday night in Game 4. So here we are, right where you need to be, in position to close out the series. If you want to look at it from a pessimist standpoint for tomorrow's game, you can say all you got to do is win one out of the next three and you move on. If you want to be an optimist, like me, play a good 60 minutes tomorrow and we can rest. There it is. You know, in the last week, the number one thing that stood out to me and the thing I'm most proud of is that, largely speaking, we have played smart. Simpler hockey, smarter hockey, playoff hockey. There's been some grit to us. We've been north-south for the most part, deviated from it a little bit there in Game 3, especially a power play in the second period that keys New Jersey's resurgent penalty kill. They don't get a shorty. They don't score a shorthanded goal. But the building comes to life because of us getting a little bit too east-west. And that ends up, in large part, contributing to a loss. But I thought we got a little bit cute for stretches in Game 3. Otherwise, really, if you look at the balance of the four games we've seen so far in this series, it has been textbook. And the most textbook part of the entire series was the final 5 minutes of our Game 4 victory. I said it on Twitter after the game was over. You can follow me at @_TomLang. Surgical finish. Surgical. And that's precisely the way it felt. If you watched it, and man, maybe, you know, you check in on the games here and there, and you saw us go up 2-1, and you thought, okay, well, we'll see if we close it out, and I'll reboot and watch with the family on a Saturday afternoon. Go back and watch the last 5-6 minutes of Game 4. My goodness. Not a whole lot of whistles. In fact, I don't know if there was even one over a long period, 4+ minutes. But we get the puck out of our zone with quickness, and we get it down into their end of the ice, behind their net, cycle, get a change. If they bring it back in the zone, it's a one and done. If they get a shot off, it's a one and done. Yes, we are operating in a place now where, technically speaking, technique-wise, system-wise, it looks like we are operating with a clear voice from the coaching staff on down through the role player. There are some concerns I have moving forward. It's hard not to look forward to a second round when you have a 3-1 series lead, but hockey's a funny game. You find a way to lose a Game 5 tomorrow afternoon. Again, we record this Friday morning. You find a way to lose a Game 5 at Amalie Arena. They go back for a raucous Game 6. That atmosphere in New Jersey, if not educated, it's at least loud. So you could lose that game, most certainly. A home playoff game with a crazy crowd. And maybe you're back facing a Game 7 where all the pressure is on us. But we're in the place we need to be. And it's hard not to look at what Boston's doing on the other side of our mini bracket here and say, whew, okay, this is a measurement game, right, about who's more playoff ready. That looks to be a war, but you got to finish your jobs here first. You got to make sure that tomorrow is 60 minutes of more of the same. It's got to be more of the same. Just because you're in a position where you're comfortable doesn't mean it's time to take liberties. And that's something that's always been kind of on the edge of our DNA. And hopefully we don't see any of that tomorrow afternoon. What we're likely to see tomorrow afternoon in Game 5, oh, probably some post-whistle scrums. There have been chippy moments left and right in this series, and Tampa Bay, New Jersey, I mean, that's as foreign as us playing somebody like Edmonton in the playoffs and one another fighting back and forth. What's going on here? That's what the playoffs does, though. That's the best part about the playoffs is after the whistles, the worst is brought out in everyone. The players on the ice, the two benches screaming back and forth at each other. Sometimes the coaches get involved. See Tortorella John shut your yap in 2004. The fans in the stands. Blood, just the pressure is rising. It's boiling over. No pun intended with Brian Boyle, who's in the middle of a lot of these things. I mean, the Lightning have shown from start to finish in this series, well, start to the point we're at right now, we will not be bullied. And that's another buoying thing I've seen so far is as we go on and we're about to face, if we finish the job here, a team like a Boston or a team like Pittsburgh, and certainly whoever comes out of the West is going to be physical. You cannot be bullied. You cannot be pushed around. And it's been a frustrating part of our game here for the last few years is we're built on speed. We're built on finesse and skill, and we don't have a whole lot of grit. Well, how about Nikita Kucherov getting in the middle of everything this series? I mean, that hit on Wednesday night, first of all, is clean. I got in an argument with my friends who said he left his feet. His left skate is on the ice until the moment of impact, and then they go flying because the impact was so significant. But when you have a skill player, a 40-goal guy like a Nikita Kucherov, getting in the middle of a physical scrum, being able to send a message for everybody, that he's the least likely person to get in the middle of something like that. Short of somebody like Jonathan Drouin last year, I can't think of anybody less likely to deliver a series-changing hit. And it's unfortunate that Sami Vatanen is hurt. I'm not rooting for anything like that, but it's shoulder-to-shoulder contact. Vatanen turns into Nikita Kucherov at the last second, and he lays the lumber in such a significant way that how can you not, if you're a third-line player, respond to that type of effort, to that type of moment? You have no choice. But it's been consistent all the way top down. You know, the Seti Paquettes are always going to be involved. Yanni Gourde certainly is going to be involved after the whistle. He likes to, you know, dust it up a little bit with just about anybody who will say yes to him. But Corey Conacher is involved. I mean, Corey Conacher is involved in the middle of a scrum. Our defensemen are all there. Mikhail Sergachev. At the end of game three, he's going toe-to-toe with Boyle, and they're screaming at each other, and Boyle's got the crazy eyes pointing at his head, and Sergachev is all beat red in the face, wanting a piece of number 11. Outstanding. This is outstanding stuff. It makes it all the more compelling. The hate is present in this series, and I think that's pretty damn cool. As for some of the storylines that, you know, have happened since we last talked, you know, game two was just a continuation of what we saw in game one. There's a lot of dominance there. 5-on-5, we're playing this series brilliantly. And then game three, you're up 2-1 early in the third period, and you have just a terrible penalty. We take too many penalties in the offensive zone this series. Some are complete BS. I'll get to that in a second. But Seti Paquette, two games in a row, and it started with game three, has taken incomprehensibly stupid penalties. I won't hold back. I'll just say it. They're stupid. And you can't have that. You can't have a guy playing 8 to 10 minutes a night on your fourth line, sometimes in your penalty kill, taking stupid penalties. He did it in back-to-back games. Can we end the experiment? I said it a couple of weeks ago that if Seti Paquette is going to be this version of himself down the stretch in the season that plays smarter hockey, that you know at least takes the high percentage play instead of the low percentage stupid play, okay, let's roll with that. And so when he messes up one time in game three, reverts back to his old low IQ form, taking penalties in the offensive zone. I believe I did say that. That's his MO too, is low IQ play and stupid penalties in the offensive zone. Now we're on notice. But then he takes a terrible tripping call to put New Jersey on a 5-on-3 for the second game in a row, I might add. And of course they score right away. He happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time in the offsides, where Corey Conacher's goal gets called back. I don't really hold that much against him, but Cooper, we're done here, right? Coach, can the love affair be over? This guy's 8 to 10 minutes a night on the ice is a liability. You're really going to get let Seti Paquette somewhere down the line in the playoffs be the reason that we don't go to the next round because we have to play 13? I saw Joe Smith of The Athletic said you would think that Michael Pekka would be somebody that we'll bring up now and play because of all the stuff that Paquette's doing wrong. I don't know. There's been evidence for a lot of time, several years, where 13 is not the best option available. And I get that Adam Ernie's injury doesn't help out. 73 would certainly be playing for us. But you can't have this anymore. He doesn't bring that much value to the faceoff circle, and the series is chippy enough without him. You don't need stupid penalties, and officials love to call stupid penalties on two types of players. One, the guy who has a reputation, remember Steve Downey in years past. And two, a role player that's a nothing player, a fourth liner. We're smart enough to limit Chris Kunitz's minutes. Will we be smart enough to make a choice tomorrow afternoon to perhaps give somebody else a chance? We'll see. But I that was the number one thing from this week. If you talk about frustrating moments, enough with the Seti Paquette experiment. Enough. I think I also called Matthew Pekka Michael Pekka. That's just the old man in me. I'm starting to get to that age where if you have a familiar last name, I'm going to call you by the guy I grew up watching. I think that happens to all of us. I used to get so mad at play-by-play and analysts saying, that was 20 years ago, pal. I'm starting to understand that. So my apologies to Matthew and his family if they listen to this very successful podcast. On the other side of the break, we've got a lot still to touch on. I mean, this is as jam-packed as a Friday edition of the Joe Bolts Fan podcast can be. Three games happened in the last week, and there's some more storylines. I got three stars to hand out, and there's obviously, too, the storyline about penalties. There's not a lot of five-on-five play this series, and the trend is getting worse. Hopefully a return to Amalie Arena tomorrow afternoon sees the end of a ridiculous trend. So we'll touch on that, too. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. We'll be right back in just a second. Subscribe to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast at Google Play and iTunes. Subscribing is free, and you'll get an alert every time a new podcast posts. Hit the podcast button on your iPhone, search Joe Bolts, and it's right there. Find the podcast at Player FM 2. More platforms are always on the way, and be sure to leave a review, especially at iTunes, because we love the feedback. Now back to the show.
Taking you higher than a Dave Mishkin goal call. You're riding the lightning on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Who's not in love with a 3-1 series lead? Oh, it's Friday. Happy Friday to you, or if you're listening to it on a Saturday morning, thanks for giving us a chance at the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. I really, really do appreciate it, and these podcasts keep getting better because the content gets more interesting. This is the postseason now, a point of the year where, you know, mistakes are magnified and the good plays, they become legendary. And what Kucherov is doing in this series, it started very slow. In fact, I talked last week about how he looks out of sorts and hopefully the empty net goal that he scored to ice game one, where he makes a hell of a move at the blue line to undress New Jersey's defenseman, get down the ice and finish that game. Hopefully that sees, you know, some kind of confidence boost within him, and we've seen it now. 9 points in four games, yeah, I think that qualifies. I don't care if he scored a couple empty net goals. Nikita Kucherov has been an absolute difference maker. So, spoiler alert, when I do three stars in a little bit, he may be somewhere in the top three, just a guess. Now, when it comes to the penalty storyline, this is the one that really, if you're looking at a macro issue that's annoying, it's a storyline that has forced itself to where you have to talk about it after games 3 and 4. I looked at the numbers for all four games and how many power plays each team had. Because really, you got to understand, as we're playing on 5-on-5 and even strength situations, we're dominating this series. I mean, New Jersey doesn't have a chance. I know I was talking with a couple of people who, you know, watched a little bit more New Jersey hockey, and they said, well, this is going to be up and down, and New Jersey's got some what for to them if you play up and down. A faster series, that is. And so, okay, fine. Let's take a look at game one. Yes, they do play a north-south game. They do like to play a fast game, and they will generate some chances. But we're the best team in the world at that style. The best team in the world. The concern is that typically the playoffs don't feature open ice rushes, back-and-forth rushes. But if you want to play that style, and this series has devolved for 2 or 3 minute packets into an up and down series, man, that's our bread and butter. Toronto isn't even as good as we are on that front. But I say all that to say we haven't had the opportunity the last two games. So here you go. Game one of the series, there were 3 power plays between the two teams. Game two, there were 6 power plays between the two teams. That's not ridiculous. It's a little high. Well, at least so I thought. Game three, 12 power plays. I get some are doubled up on with 5-on-3s. Some aren't complete because of goals, and there's a couple of 4-on-4s. But you get my point. There are 12 in game three. And in game four, it didn't slow down very much either. 11. So here you go. You're playing more than a period's worth of hockey in an odd man situation. No, man. No, sir, Mr. Referee. And second, Mr. Referee, put the whistles down. There are calls. There are calls in these last two games. Actually, I said it after game 1-2 with a JT Miller slash, that in the regular season, I look with a jaundiced eye and say, no, sir. No, that's ticky-tack. That's nonsense. That's circumstantial. There are 2 or 3 slashing calls in this series on us that I can't understand how they're worth 2 minutes. There was the goalie interference call on Braden Point in game 4 in a really key situation, and he gets shoved into Schneider. Ask yourself this question, even if you're a New Jersey fan who is hate listening to Tampa Bay Lightning content. What should 21 Braden Point have done differently in that situation to not be assessed a penalty? You can't give me a good answer there. I don't know what the official thought he saw when he made that call. But the trend is going the wrong way. Playoff hockey, the standard of what is and what is not a penalty, is tougher. It's always been the way, and as long as it's consistent from the puck dropping when the game starts to the final whistle, when somebody's net is full of celebrations and headbutts for the goaltender, it's okay. It's an understood. And I've seen calls this series where the regular season standard is being bastardized. It's absurd. It's really frustrating, too, again, when you're the better 5-on-5 team. Now, if you're New Jersey, you're fine with more situations like this, especially since the Lightning's power play has cooled off a little bit. The first couple of games, obviously, we were white hot with the power play. So if you give us, you know, 4 or 5 of those things, well, we're going to score at least 2 goals on them. And now all we need is a goal or 2 more even strength, which we're better than you at anyway. But still, I mean, think about it. New Jersey, 2 of their goals this series have been on 5-on-3s, and 2 of their goals have been Taylor Hall goals that we offered the primary assist on. Hedman in game 3 and Andre Palat in game 1. He shot a one-timer off of a giveaway right in front of the net in the slot. So can we have a Saturday afternoon where we just let the guys play? And egregious penalties, no doubters? You know, there's a saying about adult entertainment. I know what it is when I see it. That's what the standard of a penalty should be in the playoffs. Oh, well, there's nothing you can do there. To the point where even the offending team's fans, so if it's on us, like the Paquette penalties, both of them. I won't go back there through that thing, though. So I haven't touched on number 88, but give me a chance here. I will in just a moment. These are the Joe Bolts Fan 3 Stars of the Week.
Time now for the Joe Bolts Fan 3 Stars of the Week.
Greetings indeed. Taking 2 out of 3 this week. That's good news for us. I'm going to start with an unheralded candidate as the 3rd star of the week because it's a stat that I'm sure you don't know.
Number 3.
How about Braden Coburn as the number 3 star of the week? There's a lot of people I could choose on the offensive side, JT Miller being one of them that gets snubbed here. But Braden Coburn, what he's brought to the table through 4 games, I'm just looking at the minutes distribution first. I assess these things on a game-by-game basis, but then you look and you see that, for example, Sergachev is only playing 8 to 10 minutes a night. We called that on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast about 4 to 6 weeks ago, that I don't think they're going to entrust Sergachev, his first go-around in the playoffs, with 15 minutes a night unless he's earned it. And he's playing okay. He may be earning more minutes as we go along here on this 2-month ride, if we take it all the way to the edge and to the cup final. But as for right now, he's playing about 8 to 10 minutes a night. Braden Coburn, on the other hand, if there is not a crazy amount of penalties called, Coburn will play between 16 to 20 minutes a night. I'll bet you didn't know that. Now, games 3 and 4, he didn't play a whole lot. He played more like 12 to 13 minutes on average. That's because I said 12 power plays handed out in game 3, 11 in game 4. But did you know that Braden Coburn is a plus 3 in the series? Did you know that he's tied for the team lead with one other player, Steven Stamkos, for plus minus through 4 games in the series? Braden Coburn, and the reason that's important, when one of your worst defensemen, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but when one of your worst or role player defensemen is leading your team in plus minus, chances are you're winning that series. Chances are you're in a commanding lead for that series. And that's the case here. Braden Coburn is a plus 3, and he offered a primary assist on the Kucherov goal in game 4. Good stuff out of Braden. If we're playing even strength, the coaching staff sees enough out of 55 that they're trusting him with 18 or so minutes a night. Good job, Braden Coburn.
Number 2.
Okay, now here's where it gets tough, because there are two clear top candidates. Number 2 to me, and I haven't decided until I say it out loud, I'll go with Vasilevsky. You know, I really want to put him number 1 because his game is rounding into form, and there's so much to like about what's coming about here. He's following the puck brilliantly, and you saw in game 4 at least 3 circumstances where you have a rocket shot from the perimeter that he gets a whistle with. He makes an easy save, he traps it in his body, and he gets a whistle. That has not been the norm for 88 the second half of the season and down the stretch. So now he's following the puck. The last thing I wanted to see, rebound control. His rebound control is so much better. And honestly, you know, it's like anything else. Was watching the Florida State football spring game this last weekend. That's what I cover on a day-to-day basis. That game, there's a lot to like about it. There's a lot to be excited about with what FSU might be bringing to the table this fall. And if you're a Gator, don't worry, I'll get off this soon. But the quarterbacks aren't live. And if they were, the offensive line played so poorly that people would have a fundamentally different viewpoint on how that spring game went. If you actually allowed quarterbacks to be hit, they would have been hit so often that people would have looked at the spring game as perhaps a negative performance, not a positive performance. And where that is true here for the Lightning, there are breakaways and two-on-ones, more than a comfortable amount that Vasilevsky has had to handle in games 3 and 4. And he's made big saves. Think about the Maroon save in the formative moments again in game 4, where Maroon tries to deke and fakes a shot, and he wants Vasilevsky to drop down and give in. Vasilevsky waits to the last possible second. Maroon goes to the backhand. He has no space, and he fires a backhander into Vasi's right pad. There's another one with Taylor Hall, who's on a break. He gets a shot off. It's a pretty good shot. It looks like he's looking for the 5-hole. Vasilevsky makes a save. If he gives up any of those goals where New Jersey has a clean look at a 2-on-1 or they have a breakaway, we have a fundamentally different view on how the game went, on how well we played. Vasilevsky has been nothing short of MVP caliber this series. And that's a great thing, because you need that as we're moving on in the playoffs. Get the job done here, play a team like Boston or Pittsburgh. He has to be, by the end of those series, if you win them, the leading Conn Smythe candidate for the Lightning. So it looks like his game is building up to that point. And to that end, I have a little bit of audio this week. This is JT Miller talking to the media after game 4, and it's a comparison of Henrik Lundqvist, who JT played with in New York, and Andrei Vasilevsky.
He's a huge player for us, and he, you know, obviously all year he has been for this team. So, you know, he's super competitive, and obviously you can see he's thriving in the big moment.
There's a big competitor in Lundqvist in New York. Do you see any similarities as far as that competitiveness or that, you know, kind of poise on a bigger?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a, you know, it's a good example. Obviously, I got to see it firsthand of one of the best over the last decade, and you know, his competitive nature is a lot, you know, a lot like that. And you know, he doesn't like to lose. He doesn't like to give up any goals, even in practice. He's super competitive and wants to stop them all. And I think that's really important to have back there.
Typically, when I see a question like this, and it's a leading question, you know, the player is put in a circumstance where what's he supposed to say? You know, I don't think it teaches you a whole lot. For example, if I ask, you know, JT Miller, myself, and I say, well, you know, you played with Marty Brodeur for years. Just run with me in the fictional scenario. I mean, Vasilevsky has to be playing similarly to him, does he not? Well, is he supposed to say no? Because then you're dogging your own teammates. So it's an impossible moment for the player. He has to say yes. But if you watch the video of this clip, and I got the audio from Fox Sports Florida, they had some post-game breakout interviews. So I recommend, if you want to see some inside the locker room interviews, head to Fox Sports Florida and then find the Tampa Bay Lightning page, and you'll see a lot of video access. You know, JT's eyes lit up when the question was asked about competitiveness. That's why I play that clip for you. You know, he would say that anyway, even if he didn't believe it. In this case, it looks like the guy believes it. JT didn't think it was crazy to compare him to a future Hall of Famer. I love that. So I hate giving him the second star, but how can you not offer this one up?
Number one.
The Ric Flair woo. It goes to Nikita Kucherov. Woo. Yeah. You're getting involved physically. You're leading the series in points. You got four goals, two of which you earn more than... Well, actually, no, he only earned one, hasn't he? So he's had two empty netters, and he's had one where the New Jersey Devils defenseman kicks it in twice into his own net. So, okay, he has the one that was off the pass from Coburn, and then there's traffic in front, and he fires it and roofs it. But he's been a really high-level playmaker for us. He's been as advertised. And the funny thing is, I give Kucherov the number one star of the week, and yet I don't think his game is at its peak. We've seen him play better than this. In fact, there's a couple of turnovers in game four that I think are just asinine. Game three, he got a little cute on that power play where New Jersey came back to life. And then there's a turnover at the blue line this past game where Vasilevsky has to make a key save and clean up a mess, or else we're talking about that turnover a little bit more, where it's just inexcusable. A pass, you know, behind your legs, and it's a drop pass where New Jersey read it the whole way. You can't have that. But aside from a couple of blemishing moments, it looks like his confidence is coming around. In much the same way, when Vasilevsky's confidence comes around, you can see on the ice the impact it has immediately. Same thing with Kucherov. When his confidence is back, he'll shoot from anywhere and he'll score from anywhere. So, you know, those are the three stars of the week. And when you have an issue about who to choose and where to place them, yeah, that's a good problem for us. On the horizon, obviously, a 3 p.m., it's probably closer to 3:10, puck drop, Amalie Arena, Game 5 in Tampa Bay, a chance to close out the series. That is fantastic. I look forward to tomorrow. But before we go, I'm going to touch on some of the other series and just a quick look around what we're seeing in the NHL playoffs as the Stanley Cup playoffs edge towards round two, and the opponents will be known. And most of the series, they kind of have... You kind of have advance notice of what's about to happen given the bracket system. So, you know, on the other side in the Western Conference, here you go. You got Vegas who swept LA. And the one thing about Vegas, when I saw them play us a couple of times, they looked playoff bound. In they looked playoff ready with their play immediately. They're tough on the puck. You don't have time and space. They have good goaltending, and they're getting scoring from everywhere. That's a good formula. You know, the sweep isn't an indicator of how close the series was between Vegas and LA. But still, they're built to win 2-1, which is just what you need as the playoffs go on. San Jose sweeps Anaheim. That should make for an interesting series with Vegas. San Jose has more skill to them. Obviously, they're pretty physical, too. That is the litmus test of whether or not Vegas is truly for real. But I wouldn't be shocked if Vegas comes out and goes to the Western Conference Finals. On the other side, Nashville has a commanding lead over Colorado. We all expected that. Colorado's kept a lot of those games close. A couple of razor's edge wins for the Predators. But you know, it looks like they're going to move on. And Winnipeg and Minnesota, the Wild went crazy in Game 3, but it looks like Winnipeg's going to finish that thing out in 5 or 6. That is going to be one hell of a series between Winnipeg and Nashville. You want some alternate viewing from hopefully a second round meeting with the Boston Bruins, which is also going to be one of the class series of this entire playoffs. Winnipeg and Nashville will not be for the faint of heart. I don't know if the Jets have enough skill to counterbalance what defensively Nashville brings to the table, But that series is going to be intense and physical, so get ready for that. And then the other side of the East, with obviously Pittsburgh scoring goals at will on Philadelphia, looks like they're going to advance. And then the one series with, you know, it might rightfully go seven. You got Columbus and Washington. Home team hasn't won a game yet in that series. Washington bouncing back in a big way to even the series at two with a win on Thursday night in Columbus. You know, whoever wins that series is going to be the underdog to a Pittsburgh team that looks to be rounding into form at the right time. But it will be interesting, that next series, either way. Boston is in control against Toronto, and that was the game last night, unfortunately, where I think games three and four were flipped between results and what you saw on the ice. Boston outplayed Toronto in game three, and Toronto found a way to win. Last night, Toronto clearly outplays Boston, but in a span of 7 minutes of hockey that bleed over from the second to the third period, Boston has two shots. They're both on two-on-ones from turnovers or stupid plays at the offensive blue line. They go down the ice in transition. They finish the job. They go up 3-1, and that's the dagger. You can't come back from a two-goal deficit to Boston, not without having a little bit more experience to you. Toronto looks to be outmatched here. Kadri's going to come back for game five. I think it's too little, too late there. So here's where we are. We got a chance to close the series out ourselves right now, tomorrow afternoon. Hopefully there's a handshake line at the end of the game. But then gear up, because by the time we talk to each other next week, there's a decent shot that we're already playing the next series. Either way, if we go the distance here, Game 7 would be next Wednesday. So if we're collapsing, I don't get to talk to you until after the collapsing has commenced. So here's hoping this time next week we talk. Times are good. But I did tell you on the way out here for the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast that if we won 2 out of 3 at least between last week's episode and this week's episode, a little more L.A. woman. I've gotten to play that 3 times in 4 games, and I look forward to hopefully playing it a 4th out of 5 games. Thanks for listening to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.